They are attracted by virtue. And, this granted, they demand the assistance of force by means of which they are to substitute their own tendencies for those of the human race. It is only needful to open, almost at random, a book on philosophy, politics, or history to see how strongly this idea, the child of classical studies and the mother of socialism, is rooted in our country. That mankind is merely inert matter, receiving life, organization, morality, and wealth from power. Or rather, and still worse, that mankind itself tends towards degradation and is only arrested in its tendency by the mysterious hand of the legislator. Classical conventionalism shows us everywhere, behind passive society, a hidden power under the names of law or legislator, or by a mode of expression which refers to some person or persons of undisputed weight and authority, but not named, which moves, animates, enriches, and regenerates mankind. We will give a quotation from Bossuet. "One of the things which was the most strongly impressed, by whom, upon the mind of the Egyptians, was the love of their country. Nobody was allowed to be useless to the state. The law assigned to every one his employment, which descended from father to son. No one was permitted to have two professions, nor to adopt another. But there was one occupation which was obliged to be common to all. This was the study of the laws and of wisdom. Ignorance of religion and the political regulations of the country was excused in no condition of life. Moreover, every profession had a district assigned to it. By whom? Amongst good laws, one of the best things was that everybody was taught to observe them. By whom? Egypt abounded with wonderful inventions, and nothing was neglected which could render life comfortable and tranquil. Thus men, according to Bossuet, derive nothing from themselves. Patriotism, wealth, inventions, husbandry, science, all come to them by the operation of the laws or by kings. All they have to do is to be passive." It is on this ground that Bossuet takes exception when Diodorus accuses the Egyptians of rejecting wrestling and music. "How is that possible," says he, "since these arts were invented by Trismegistus?" It is the same with the Persians. "One of the first cares of the prince was to encourage agriculture. As there were posts established for the regulation of the armies, so there were offices for the superintending of rural works. The respect with which the Persians were inspired for royal authority was excessive." The Greeks, although full of mind, were no less strangers to their own responsibilities, so much so that of themselves, like dogs and horses, they would not have ventured upon the most simple games. In a classical sense, it is an undisputed thing that everything comes to the people from without. The Greeks, naturally full of spirit and courage, had been early cultivated by kings and colonies who had come from Egypt. From them they had learned the exercises of the body, foot races and horse and chariot races. The best thing that the Egyptians had taught them was to become docile and to allow themselves to be formed by the laws for the public good. Fenelon, reared in the study and admiration of antiquity and a witness of the power of Louis XIV, Fenelon naturally adopted the idea that mankind should be passive, and that its misfortunes and its prosperities, its virtues and its vices are caused by the external influence that is exercised upon it by the law or by the makers of the law. Thus, in his Utopia of Salentum, he brings the men with their interest, their faculties, their desires, and their possessions under the absolute direction of the legislator. Whatever the subject may be, they themselves have no voice in it. The prince judges for them. The nation is just a